Welcome to Toilets to Titles, Down Under Dynasty, with your host, Outlife from the Ben, and with me, as usual, my co-host, at FF Doormat. How are you today, Matt?
Matt, I'm in mourning. I'm feeling a bit soul, a bit sorry, a bit sad, a bit upset. Instant reaction from Dobbins' knee bump. Yeah.
What is your Dobbins exposure? You got a lot of Dobbins. You're very high on him.
Yeah, he was my number one with JT coming out of class. I probably had Dobbins ahead of JT. It's probably an error now, but in the passing game, he might be a little bit superior. So yeah, for me, he was my got him in a couple of places. I think a little bit sad. I was lucky enough to be on the clock in the Euro. Actually, I wasn't on the clock. Someone else was on the clock. Just when it broke, and I tagged him and said, "You're on the clock," and he didn't pick Edwards. So I was next up, and I grabbed Edwards sort of twice in that league. In the Euro leagues, it's a redraft charity league. I was on the clock when the EDM news broke, so I grabbed Robinson, and then I grabbed Edwards. So pure luck, you know, no planning involved from me. That's fantasy, right? Put all this work in the off season and do all these sort of things, and now it breaks for you.
Yeah, those two picks could be league winners. Look, I'm hoping that it just looked worse than what it is, and maybe it's just some kind of, you know, hyperextension of the knee. PCL. Hopefully there's not too much ligament damage, and maybe he isn't out for the year. That's what I'm hoping, fingers crossed. If he is, I mean, that's two potential stud running backs from last year's rookie class now on the shelf for the year. What do you think this does for Gus Edwards' value?
Look, I'm not a medical expert, obviously, in any way, shape, or form, but it didn't look super bad to me. Some of them you see them and you don't want to see that replay again, right? So it didn't look that bad, just looked a bit of a bump and didn't look the best. So I'm hoping it's just, he might miss a few games, three or four games. I think Dr. David Chow, pro football doc, put a little thing up there and said it's looking like it could be a best case scenario, George Kittle. So he might just miss a month or so, but worst case scenario, it could be a ligament tear and be out for the season. But yeah, look, for me, it didn't look too bad, but who knows. But for Gus Edwards, I think obviously, you know, he had a bit of value already. I think he was going to always cut into Dobbins' workload, and now there's no Dobbins there. It just depends on how.
Yeah, I mean, look, I just want to wait and see, because I'm really hopeful that it's not that much and he's just out for a month, like you're saying. If he's out for a while, who's the? I don't even know who the third string running back is for
Justice Baltimore. Hill, maybe
Justice Hill, or that Tyron Williams guy.
They might even bring someone in. Who knows?
Curly did visit there, didn't he? In the off season,
he did. Yeah, so, mate. Hopefully.
So, but before we kick off, just want to let everybody know that you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Podbean, and the Facebook page Toilets to Titles When a Family Breaks. And of course, Spotify. And if you're listening to us and you like us, hit the like and subscribe button and subscribe to the whole suite of Toilets to Titles podcasts for all your football needs in season. We've got a host of shows now on the channel. So it's really exciting stuff. Get on it.
Dollars to deuces. So deuces is yank talk for the $2 bill. Obviously, it's a play on number two, obviously, to learn something new every day. Hear it towards
learn something. And I've got something new. If you're watching this for the first time or hearing this for the first time, you can join the Toilets to Titles Patreon for the first tier at $3 per month. The second tier is $5 per month. And then tier three is $10 per month. So the first tier gets you into the T2T group chat. The second tier gets you early access to our waiver wire episodes and entry into Frankenstein League next year. That's full now, chockers. But it'll get you in next year. And the $10 tier will get you one-on-one roster analysis from anyone in the Toilets to Titles team, entry into the group chat, and of course, and free entry into the Frankenstein Listen League next year, and early access to the waiver wire episodes. So give that a go. Please, give us a try. Don't like it? You can just unsubscribe, but you'll like it. So, Matt, this episode, we were going to talk about the shift in dynasty strategy as we go from the off season into the season. So for yourself, what does that look like? How does your strategy evolve as we head from the off season through the preseason into the real McCoy?
Well, I think it's just important to have, you know, some sort of direction for your team right about now for the point score. Season begins, and most of my for me, I just put it in a spreadsheet. Easiest way for me, put my strengths, weak, you know, see where my gaps are, and then see what the range of outcomes is for my team. You know, am I a strong contender? Do I have, you know, a good stable, or do I need a few things to break? You know, I need a bit of luck, and I need this, and I need that. Then you're probably not. So I think it's important just to sort of have that outlook for you, each of your teams and your leagues, and then go from there. Sort of want to commit to a direction is my take on it. I don't really sell out. I still want to stay a little bit liquid where I can, and not, you know, you don't want to all your firsts for a league, and you know, but you want to sort of be targeting those older vets. So, and depends on the league makeup too, you know. If you're a single league, it's so, yeah, if you're a contender, you're probably looking at those older guys. If you're not a contender, then you definitely be getting rid of the older vets, and you probably want to be trading them right to another weaker team. What about you, mate? What's high level? What do you use?
Sorry, mate. Look, for me, it's just about making, like you said, that honest evaluation of the roster, right? And, you know, making sure that I trust myself and I trust my takes, and it's not just, like people talk about state studs, and one of the mistakes that I would previously make is that I would start my studs, and I wouldn't start the guys who weren't previously studs, but they would be balling out at the start of the season, and it would take me too long to trust them to put them into my lineup, right? So that's an adjustment that I made sure I made to, you know, get those players who are playing well early in the season into my lineup, because it's a short season, right? Before you know it, it's over. And then it's making an assessment of the players who are playing and what do I believe and what I don't believe. And everybody talks about, you know, buy low, sell high. But I'm more in the belief, and I think it's easier to buy high. So see what players are coming out and performing. And if I believe in them, pay the price plus, if I have to get those guys onto my rosters. And the guys that I don't believe in, you know, selling them while I can to get them off my rosters if I believe what I'm seeing is legitimate.
Yeah, nice. Look, I like that. You do often hear about wide receivers before they hit this age. And if you're a win now roster, if you've got a strong contender, who cares about value? That's not going to do anything for you. Mike Davis is probably a league winner last year. The talk was that we should have sold the Green Bay running back, but they were never going to re-sign him. AJ Dillon was coming in. We should have sold him. And they still might be right, you know, like he's still, you know, he's just re-signed. And if you're a contender and you sold him to get value, you know, unless you hit a jackpot with that value, you're not going to get that. There's no way you get those points back. I like that buy high. I like that approach, you know, depending on, it's team dependent, of course. No point buying high if you're going for that 101. But if you're not, if you're a contender, or it's a good move to.
Yeah, and that's a lesson that I learned. I sold Aaron Jones to, not this offseason, but last offseason. You know, so I sold him because I thought he'd peaked. But he had another massive year, and he's still got a lot of value going into this year. And now that he's got that contract extension, he's kind of...
Yeah, I sold him in console wars. I got CeeDee Lamb back. It was I think I sold Brady and pretty good. I think I got that. But yeah, the you know, everyone was telling me, sell him. And I sold him. Look, I probably would do it again, I guess, because I wasn't a contender in that league. But if you're a contender, it's going to be hard.
And do you try to balance your roster by having some bridge players that are on your team who get production, who aren't super valuable in trades while you're waiting for your young players? You know, back when I first started playing Dynasty, I'd, you know, be trying to acquire all these young, pretty players. And then you go to start somebody in your wide receiver one slot, and you know, your sexy stud young player who, you know, you think is going to be a superstar is producing like a wide receiver three for fantasy.
Yeah, look, it's okay if you're going for that one. Get all these young. Now, JJ Asiga Whiteside, any value at all? It's a really lotto ticket, right? So you don't want to have all these lotto tickets inside. You don't want to just base your whole league outlook on, have a few eggs that can hit, and if you're Jarvis Landry and those type of players, dependable players that can still score your points and decent work, 3-4. Especially if it's really team dependent. If you're made a decision to go super young, then you don't want any. Really, you know, unless there's anything you can flip them in season. So maybe you'll grab them in your startup draft. I've gone with a productive struggle in a couple of leagues, but I've seen value there in some studs late, sorry, some vets late, and I've grabbed them purely just because I know in season or in the past I've just gone sold to someone like, if he does, you know, if he does hit, he's going to hit large, but the reality is these vets, they're going to be worth something. Someone's going to need them. It's going to be an injury or someone's going to have and you can ship them off.
And from both the point of view of a contender and then also somebody who's rebuilding, what time, is there any particular timetable on when you're looking to sell your veterans, sell veterans if you're not contending, or buy veterans if you're contending? Is there an ideal time frame that you're looking at? Is it, or are you
I don't have a hard and fast rule. It just depends on some get back, but you probably want to look at that before they hit contract for your RBs. For me, it's not nothing new, but you want to draft those young RBs and sell them as they get older. So.
Yeah, I meant more like if you were contending and you had a contending team, right?
Yeah.
And you needed, you thought, okay, I like my team. It's good. I can win this year, right? But I need maybe an extra wide receiver two or a stud running back. Is there a point in the season you're looking to get that player, or are you just looking to get them as soon as possible? And if you have that player but you're not contending, are you how long? Are you trying to sell him as quickly as possible, or you're holding? Yep, so, there's a time you think you've got optimal return.
Yeah. So if I'm a win now contender, like I am in Kraken, I think I'm undefeated there. But no, seriously, if I'm a contender, my personal view is just buy him sooner rather than later, because there's probably going to be three or four contenders looking for that same guy when, you know, that the final few weeks come. So there is a bit of risk in that. You buy someone, they can get injured. That's just, it is what it is, right? For me, I'd rather buy them earlier. I know I've got them and just carry that injury. You can pivot in season, week 10, you can luck your way through and then see who's healthy there and get them. But then maybe the next week they get injured anyway. So for me, I don't really take injury. I just want to get those guys sort of as early as I can, just so I can build that, that redundancy, I guess, in my side, that I've got some guys to pivot around. One injuries, you don't want to come into week 10 and someone's holding backup QB and he's going to squeeze you and squeeze you for it, because he knows there's four or five guys that need that QB and you're desperate. You're probably going to overpay. That's been my experience. I've done it. I've sort of been desperate. Needed someone. I think I was 8-0 or 9-0 in one. Sold out for a couple of backup guys. Buying those vets is good, but if I had done it earlier, I would have paid a lot less and it wouldn't have been so needy. So yeah, for me, especially in a multi-copy league, especially in a single-copy league, not a multi-copy league, especially in a single-copy league, you probably want to get three or four owners that are trying to do the same move, or they make that move and you can't, because then as far as selling, I'd probably wait. Hopefully until they have a couple of decent games and then move them. But it just depends on that. You've got a clear one, like Trevor Lawrence, then you just take a loss. But coming up to this year, there's not really, I'm high on Spencer Rattler, but there's no super one. So I'd probably just try and get that little bit of extra value. And if you end up with a one, not the end of the world, you're still getting talent. And I'd probably just hold him a bit longer. I wouldn't be just trying to push him.
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point there. I mean, yourself and me, we play in leagues where the draft order is determined by potential points. And so in a situation like that, if you're not a contending team and there's a stud 101 like Lawrence or Saquon Barkley, you're probably feeling a lot of pressure to kind of get those points off your roster, right? But if it's a year like this year that you mentioned coming up, that pressure's not, it's probably not there. But if for myself, if it's an older veteran, so for example, like an Adam Thielen or a Julio Jones, I'm trying to get that person off my roster if I'm not contending as soon as possible, just in case I get hurt again or beat up or something of that nature. Whereas, and you said this, and it's not something that you worry about, but I'm trying to, if I feel I'm a contender, a true contender, I'm trying to set my lineups for as long as I can without needing to go out and buy other pieces. Because I feel if I'm a true contender, I should be able to do that. And I don't want to buy that guy, especially for a first. I don't want to spend first round picks for guys that might get injured during the season. If value presents itself either way, as a contender or as a, somebody who isn't contending, yeah, absolutely. And, if it's seconds or thirds or something of that nature, I'll trade that all day to get a piece that can help my roster right now. But those first round picks, the value just, it just always goes up and up and up. And it's not often that I haven't regretted selling my first round picks, to be honest. Just because when the draft rolls around, it's so much fun. I've got lots of value, but just that side of it, you know, it's always fun to have picks.
It's fun to have picks, and then if you're sitting, even at the end of, you can still flip that, you can move up. So, yeah, there is that value to be had. But, yeah, look, I'm with you. You shouldn't have to give up. If you're a real contender, that first, selling that first, yes, it's late, but if you're that strong a contender, you really should. Someone for a second, and then that's, you know, these seconds when you're talking about late, it's completely different. It's a bit of a dart shot anyway. Early to mid, you can jag these guys, but it's pretty tough to hit. I like that. If you're a contender, you know, you pivot, you make that mid-season strategy that you can do, but you know, unless there's...
Even as a contender, even though it's a late first, people just see it as a first, and then once the draft, the hype gets so ridiculous for every draft, maybe that rookie won't help you, but the kind of player you can buy for that first... In the hype of draft season is sometimes ridiculous. It's
almost always ridiculous. There's someone who's gonna bite on that, and I guess it goes back to, if you're in a league that never trades listing Jones or whatnot, there it might be a bit harder season. But if you're in a league that you've got tons of owners that like that trading and like that value, and hopefully you're in those leagues, not the former league, a lot of trade action, then it's probably easier to get your lineup come week 10, week with that second.
And as a contender, if you get an injury, are you the type of person who may look to flip that injured player to a non-competing team, right, for a player maybe in a tier below but still a really good producer? I'm talking like if you got a superstar player who got hurt. So, you know, for a player in a tier below, or adding a draft pick to that player that's hurt to get a player in the same tier. Is that something that you would do?
So like Travis Etienne, or we're saying like
for example, and I'm putting myself out there to look like a bit of a dickhead, but last year when Saquon Barkley got hurt, I had him on a couple of contending teams, and I flipped him for Clyde Edwards-Helaire, right, in two leagues.
I don't think that's a terrible move. I think I got off Barkley for those injuries, but yeah, look, I think so. I think just because he still has that much, these Barkley, these Kamaras, they still hold a lot of value, and they're an older stud. Probably about the time you want to sell him anyway, really, right? Like this is, even if you're selling Barkley now, you're probably losing a little. Yeah, I think so. I think if I'm, you know, 1-10 or 9-2 or something, Barkley goes down and I've got him, I'd sell him for less, or maybe chuck in a draft pick and get another superstar. But it just depends. If it's a younger stud, I probably wouldn't. If it's Travis Etienne and I'm a contender, I probably would want to, because I'm pretty high on him. I don't know how much he's really going to contribute to my team anyway if I'm a contender. I'd probably just say, you're not going to get a first for him, really. People are going to try and lowball you, unless I can get a sweet deal. Like, I still want that value. Stingy, I guess, to just give him away. So, yeah, that's my approach. What about you?
Yeah, well, obviously, I'll make that kind of move if I feel I'm a big-time contender, because I did last year. You know, it helped
younger,
me with
younger guys. If you got a younger guy who's injured, were you still like, if you had Akers, would you flip him for a Damien Harris or someone, or Mike Davis?
If I had a big, not Mike Davis, I'd probably flip Akers for Damien Harris, but I really believe in Damien Harris. I sold Akers when he got hurt for Jaden Daniels, who, you know, in the Divi League, he's a college quarterback. Just did that. So I mean, for me, in regards to making that kind of move, I'm happy to make that pivot. I would rather have, like I mentioned, that the Saquon CEH move. I'd probably rather have CEH over Saquon right now, just because of that situation. Saquon on the Giants, Daniel Jones still a big question mark. The offensive line still a big question mark. So, you know, if I can get trade an injured player for a healthy player in season, and I'm not, it's not a massive, you know, drop in talent or tier, even if it's just moving down a tier and a half, I'll definitely do that if I'm competing. And I'll definitely do the reverse if I'm not competing. You know, like if somebody drafted Travis Etienne in a startup anticipating that he's going to be a stud, right, I'd offer James Robinson. I might offer James, and I did a productive struggle kind of startup, and I didn't think I could compete. I'd offer somebody like James Robinson for Travis Etienne right now. That's yes, how much like I believe in Etienne, you know?
So I guess it's, like, I guess it's you make those moves when you've got a younger asset that can still ascend, right? Like if you've got someone who's older, there's no way, even if they come back and even if they get back to their full potential, their value is not going to increase where that Etienne, Akers, there's a path for them where they can come back. They've still got that in a decent situation and increase in value.
Yeah, I think that's a smart move. Like Dobbins, if Dobbins is hurt and you're contending, what's the worst running back you would trade for Dobbins? So you're getting Dobbins off your roster because you're a big time contender and you need another running back. What's the lowest running back you would take for him?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm really high on Dobbins, so it'd probably take a kidding. you still want a younger running back, maybe a tier down, and you'd have to be an out now. But if he's out for the year, I don't know. Are you taking Derrick Henry for Dobbins? Was that a move you'd make? I don't feel real good about that move, but he's probably going to be close to the RB1-2 this year.
I don't think you could get that though. I don't think you could take Dobbins in most leagues, an injured Dobbins, and go and trade for Derrick Henry. Not at the start of the year.
Yeah. So then, what's the next tier down?
I'm trying to think.
In between that, a bit higher than Harris, a bit lower than Henry. Maybe James Robinson. Don't feel that either.
Oh, I wouldn't feel great. Mixon. I think you'd still see Mixon going above Dobbins. But yeah,
check something.
Yeah. You'd probably have to add to Dobbins. Alternatively, obviously you would trade Damien Harris to get Dobbins, right?
Yeah. It depends on your rankings and depends on your. Mm-hmm. I'm bringing up the rankings now.
Yeah.
What about Eckler?
If I wasn't a contender, I'd probably do something like Eckler for Dobbins.
Would you sell Eckler?
If I wasn't a contender, I'd probably try. I'd be trying to get Dobbins plus.
Depends how.
Yeah.
So we got Elliott, Eckler, Sanders, Montgomery, Chris Carson.
I definitely like Monty, Miles Sanders. They're probably in that tier of player that I would be happy getting for Dobbins if I was a contender, and Dobbins is out for the year. I'd probably trade Dobbins for Sanders or Monty.
Would you rather a Dobbins in a first for Antonio Gibson or Dobbins in a second for a higher tier, or would you just try and take a tier down like a?
I'd probably try and do that straight up. I'd do Dobbins in a first for Gibson because I think Gibson's going to finish like top three, so I'd do that. But no, look, I mean, this conversation just started because I was just curious if those are the type of those are the kind of moves that, you know, you would look to make, and we've both said that those are.
Yeah, look, both sides of the court, especially, it's just a no-brainer. Obviously, you don't want to involve any picks. Sell some of the, as soon as they're injured, they know you're right. But as the season goes on, and
going back to what I said before about buying high, if somebody like a T. Higgins comes out and has a T. Higgins or a Brandon Ayuk, right, and they start the season off with two massive games, are you somebody who would then buy those players high? Like, if you believed in the players, would you pay more than what they were currently worth after those two games in anticipation that they would be higher, that they go higher? Or are you kind of the kind of person who's just going to say, no, that's their value, I'm only going to pay what they're worth right now?
For two games, I probably wouldn't. If I believe them, I'd play those two games because I'd probably be more likely to flip them off, but it depends from but more like a Kyler Murray. I mean, if you're talking about, he's proven himself, he's going to be a QB1, even though he's probably not going to send in value anymore. I think buy a high target just because you're definitely, yes, you're going to lose some value buying him, but he's going to produce. It's not just.
And in season, how do you approach waivers?
I would rather probably wait for a definite hit. I think last year we were in a league and James Robinson was available. He became available mid-year and we both went 100% on our waiver wire budget. I think I put my bid in like a minute before yours, so I ended up getting him. But if you've whittled away a dollar here, $2 there, $5 there, you're going to miss that sort of out now. You know, there's not many of them. And when they are available, it's pretty obvious to everyone. So you want to... For me, I'd rather just hold back those waivers until I know I'm going to get sort of someone who's, you know, like say this was in season and Gus Edwards, I'd rather save it for that sort of, rather than just trying to take someone who, you know, a backup player who, you know, Jacoby Myers or someone, or keep all my fab in there. That's sort of my approach, and probably because I've just got so many leagues and it's just so tough to set them.
You're not going through all your leagues, seeing who's available on the waiver wire each week and seeing how many points they scored last week, if they've put two or three games together that's well. You're waiting for that obvious one.
Look, I'll try and pick them up super cheap if I can. Those leagues after your first waiver run, you free ad drops, I've always found you can get value there. And it might be league dependent too, really. But yeah, that's my approach. I'll have a sneaky look, but I'll try not to need someone's broken out. We're taking in, if there's someone's a clear-cut backup, I'm probably more in-season, see who scored the weeks. You know, probably now I'm doing it in all my leagues. I'm looking at who's available now. There's in-season, we've got that small. It can be hard to do. What about you, mate? What's your approach?
My approach is I mine the waiver wire constantly. You know, just looking at who's on the waiver wire, how many points they scored last week, what kind of opportunity they had, who's the starter in front of them. I'm not like you at all. I'm pretty liberal with my fab budget. Just because I find all my leagues have so many roster spots that if somebody pops even a little bit, someone's going to pick them up. So I want to get that guy on my roster and hope that, you know, he's the next James Robinson, because I don't think that finding, you know, unless you're someone like Shane P. Hallam and you're scouting and, you know, these guys are watching all this film, finding the next James Robinson is really just luck and hoping that you picked him up at the right time and that he's on your team.
Yeah, look, it definitely is a lot of luck in. But yeah, look, it just depends. Like I said, I'd probably rather save it because these guys are going to jump on it faster than anyone else. You can outbid them. And it depends. If you got the free ad drops afterwards, I'll find you can mine them there. So I'm probably a bit tighter in that. But you know, there's not often a massive difference to these James Robinson.
A lot of time early in the season, I find myself more interested in the players other people are dropping to pick up these players.
Look, in IDP, it definitely you can. If we're talking IDP, the people, you know, the players that are dropping, go and wait a day or two. Normally they're locked for a day. You can scoop them back up in that.
Yeah. And is there any kind of particular strategy that you do, that you have when setting your lineups? Are you just start your studs? Are you looking intensely at the matchups? You know, the corner who might be on your wide receivers, the defensive line in regards to the running backs, the linebackers in regards to the running backs, the coverage linebackers in regards to the tight ends.
Not really, not that deep. You know, a little bit. Obviously, if you're playing the Rams, it's a bit different if you're playing the Lions, right? So in that sense, I've got my eye on a matchup. I'd probably rather start my then pick week by week, you know, who the corner is. I think there's a couple of resources out there which you can tap into, which do that sort of work for you, which I've started to look at this year a little bit. I've mostly started my start a bad bunch.
Yeah.
You, mate? How's your approach?
I think you just have to be careful with that approach because, you know, like too often you roll out your, like I've had situations where the studs turn over each year, right? And if you're starting a guy who was a stud last year, but all of a sudden he's not a stud anymore, but you're still rolling him out there based off what he did last year, well, then you could be in trouble. And same if you're keeping a guy on the bench, he's in the midst of a breakout because you don't quite believe yet. If it takes you too long to make that adjustment, you can find yourself out of the playoffs. Mate, the weeks after weeks, I put Sammy Watkins in my lineup, mate. Only to be continually disappointed.
I think we've all been there with a player at tight end Premier League. I just slept on him. I didn't start him. So look, it can bite you in the back. But I guess maybe the move is to just let him, just add him. But you know, if you got someone who's born out, I'm not gonna take him out of my. Probably what I'm if I've got a stud RB and they're facing more in defense, I'm probably gonna leave really sweet. But it's not often I'll go super match playing a terrible team.
Just say you've got AJ Brown on your squad and you've got Corey Davis on your squad, and AJ Brown is struggling. He's putting together, you know, three or four average weeks, whereas Corey Davis has put together three or four great weeks on the Jets, getting all those targets from Zach Wilson. How long has it taken you to make that shift to take AJ Brown out of your lineup and put Corey Davis into your lineup?
Hopefully you're playing best ball, so it doesn't matter. look, probably too long. You know, unless it's injury related, I'm probably just waiting on AJ to have that.
You're just gonna keep game,
because you can be sure. You can be sure that the minute you take him out, he's gonna score 6 touchdowns, go for 4,000 yards, and Davis is gonna give you that duck egg. So it's a fine needle to thread, isn't it? If AJ Brown's going, if he's struggling, he's got a tough matchup. You know, but if you're struggling, he's playing the Lions. It depends on your love for Corey Davis, too. I think you start Corey Davis ahead of AJ Brown, would you? Come on.
No. This is. I was just using those two players as an example.
Yeah, I probably would keep the stud in, but it just depends on them.
I know for guys like us with teams so loaded, we have these issues every week. But I had to use players like AJ Brown and Corey Davis to relate to the average listener.
We're here for the people.
No, look, I was a big just roll out my studs guy for probably too long, and now I take a lot more notice of the matchups and the players they're going to be opposing than what I did previously. Because even a guy who has, you know, a massive year, even a guy who has, you know, 1,300 or 1,400 yards receiving, he probably has, you know, 6 or 7 amazing games. 6 or 7 good games if you're a superstar player, and then a handful of crap games. Or not crap games, but games where he doesn't do that too much.
It depends on the player. It depends on the matchup, right? If you're talking about an out-and-out superstar player playing well, you probably don't have to worry about it too much. But if you're talking about a good player, maybe a great player, but superstar, and they're going up against Jalen Ramsey, you know, in one-on-one coverage, that's someone, if I got a soft top Corey Davis for, or someone like that, you know, maybe then I might take that approach. It's got to be that top level they're facing it.
And if you've got a team that's winning, right, but just winning, and the points scored are not great, you're down, you know, you're in the middle in the points scored, are you still trying to compete? You're not, as long as you're getting those wins, you're not looking at your roster and saying, oh, I'm getting these wins, but it's, you know, it's a house of cards.
No, I've so many times I've had greats where you get knocked in. So, you know, if you need a bit of luck and you're getting it, just roll with it.
I reckon,
you know, if you're getting those final weeks and it can happen, you know, maybe you've got a terrible side, but you've got Kamara and your 6 touchdowns and win. So, yeah, I think you don't want to be too cute about it. Instead of getting the 105, you get the 108 or something. Maybe you win the league too.
Yeah, so, I mean, we both, you know, talked about knowing whether you're a contender or a, you know, pretender. But if I'm unsure, well, you should try to know. But if I'm kind of, if I could compete, I'm setting my best lineup every week and trying to win, right? Even if I don't have a monster squad. And I'm only selling my players going in full tank mode if I know, if all my players are on the older end and I know that the cliff is coming. If I've got a young, you know, a youngish roster, I'm still starting my guys every week, starting my best squad, trying to win.
Yeah, so many times. Motocopy League once where you got opponent, you know, I was second overall out of 72. I chose my opponent and he whipped me. Absolutely whipped me. I think it was Peyton Barber scored 3 touchdowns. It happens to everyone, right? If you're there, just put yourself in the mix. Good things can happen.
So is there anything else that you'd like to talk about in relation to in-season dynasty strategy?
Just try not to be too knee-jerky. I think you know, we can all be a victim of it at times, including to myself. Sometimes you'll get an injury and you know panicking. Just take a deep breath before you send those offers out. Just check yourself, take your time, and then approach it. I think it goes a bit pear-shaped if you hurry too much. that's what I'd say. Just
I'll just chime in as someone who bought Todd Gurley last off-season, thinking have a revival with the Falcons. Don't spend first-round picks on older running backs. Especially older running backs who have bad knees, right?
We've all been there.
So, look, before we let you go, we just want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Primetime Sports Talk, your top source for all major sports content, including DFS, fantasy advice, and great gambling tips. Be sure to head to primetimesportstalk.com to check out their in-depth analysis, exclusive articles, fascinating interviews, and explore the rest of their amazing podcast family. Again, primetimesportstalk.com, your go-to spot for sports content. And please remember, you can find me at Life from the Ben. You can find my co-host, Matt Hatton, at FF Doormat. And, of course, follow the Toilets to Titles handle at Toilets to Titles. Follow all the team. And if you like us, hit the like button. and give us an Apple Podcast review. Was there anything else to say, Matt?
Just counting down, mate. Counting down the days. That's it.
Real football is just around the corner, and we'll be setting these lineups really, really soon. Anyway, ciao, everybody.